Welcome to the Voice Hacks Podcast. I'm your host, Mary Z. On the Voice Hacks Podcast, I'll be talking to some of rock and metal's best singers, coaches, and experts about what goes into the mysterious and amazing sounds we make with our voices. If you like this podcast, please help spread the word by sharing it with your friends. Post our episodes on your Facebook and Instagram and tag me and my guests. I'm at Metal Mary Z on Instagram. Don't forget to leave the show a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. And of course, follow me on YouTube at Voice Hacks by Mary Z. Let's get into it. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Voice Hacks Podcast. I am very stoked to be kicking off the 2023 season of episodes with Chris number 2 of Anti-Flag. Thank you so much, Chris, for taking the time to be with us today and to talk to us. We're stoked to have you on the podcast. How are you today?
Very well. Grateful for the opportunity to hang out and to meet you and hopefully get into some cool shit. But honestly, you know, we just put out a record and our year has been busy immediately. So it's anytime we have these opportunities to kind of like assess that our art and vocation still has value, they're great for us. So feels nice to be releasing new music and to be talking to new people. So we're really grateful and excited to be in with you tonight.
It's super awesome. I'm stoked to talk to you about the record. Came out January 6th, Lies They Tell Our Children. You have a lot of cool guest vocalists, and one of the first guest vocalists you had was Jesse Leach from Killswitch Engage, which I thought was interesting because it's a metal vocalist with a punk collab. And it certainly made your first single a lot heavier. And I really, Modern Meta Medicine, I really want to talk about the message behind that first single about the medical industry. So tell me a little bit about how you got Jesse involved in the first single.
I did Jesse and Matt Stock's podcast called Stoked Fire. And that was, you know, I've seen and interacted with Jesse and Killswitch. We have many mutual friends and actually some people that work in their camp that have worked with us or been in bands that we've toured with. So a lot of like connections. And then we're really good friends with Matt Stokes, who started that podcast with Jesse. And so that's kind of what brought our worlds together. And then in that little, you know, maybe an hour and a half or 2-hour conversation we all had together, there was an immediate kinship between Jesse and myself. And then I think that we understood each other's politics a little bit better than maybe we thought just on the surface level of what they were. You know, I think that a lot of people who interact with Anti-Flag have a very often preconceived notion as to what we will be or how we will act or the things that are important to us. And then they find that ultimately our politics are very simple. Be kind, be empathetical. Treat people on the planet with respect and the dignity that they deserve. And, you know, we allow space for people to be and figure out who they are. And so I think that there's maybe a more confrontational ideal of what we will be. And then people interact with us and realize that we just want to be nice in a world that is really hard and arduous a lot of the time. It can be an act of resistance to be con in 2023. So what we found was Jesse kind of has that same approach and same mantra that he lives by. And so when we wrote this song, Modern Medicine, it was one that was actually quite, I don't want to say contested internally, but it was certainly discussed at a higher level than a lot of our other songs lyrically, because it was treading some dangerous and scary waters, especially in a global pandemic era, in a hyper divisive and a hyper sensationalized world that we're living in. to criticize an industry, a for-profit healthcare industry, can align me with some people who are maybe doing it in a more nefarious way, or maybe doing it to prove their own points or to supplement their own fears. And so the underlying or overarching ideal of the lyrics is that we have far more in common with each other than we do with the powerful. And so these power structures that exist that allow, during a global pandemic, so many people to lose their livelihood, and then a handful of people to enrich themselves beyond our wildest beliefs. It is a commentary that needs to be said of the 30 plus industrialized nations of the world. The United States is the only one where you can go bankrupt because you had a medical procedure done. That is a moral failure of our country. I think that Jesse being on the song adds a sense of urgency to that ideology that we're talking about lyrically. And so it just was a maybe a less expected collaboration, but one that when you hear it or dissect it, makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, because it certainly turned out to be one of the heavier songs you guys have ever done. When you talk about the meaning going hand in hand with it, it makes sense. It's quite an impassioned plea.
If you miss a day of work, you're fucked. You know, and like so many people are living minute to minute in this country, and to have that fear and that burden and that weight on their back as to whether or not they may or may not get sick. We think frankly, it's fucked up, and it's a broken way to live. And so all of it went into the creation of that song.
You know, I thought it was really cool how on this record, you've kind of branched out and you invited not just Jesse to collab, but you have a lot of vocalists collabing on this record. Mm-hmm. Shane Told from Silverstein, you know, that one was really cool too. That was a different, I wasn't quite expecting that appearance. When you have guest vocalists like this, are they writing their own parts and contributing their own lyrics, or do you come to them with an idea? How does it go for you?
For this record, everything was kind of done. There was only one part that was written for it, and that's Campino from De Totenhosen. We did a second version where he sings in German. And
that's so cool. Okay.
And so the lyrics didn't translate one for one. So we kind of let him write his own part that he would sing in German. And so,
cool.
But yeah, mostly everything was done. A few people took their own artistic liberties melody-wise. And that was really cool and really exciting. I think Tim Rise Against did a really good job of, you know, when I sent it to him, there was a version of me singing that part where I was pretending to be him. And then he did a great job of being his authentic self and delivering it in a way that, you know, really was, it was cool. Because there used to be a thing in recording where there was an aha moment when you get making records. Partly because everything was done much slower, and you wouldn't really hear, you know, you'd be doing guitars for 2 weeks. You'd only hear that fucking one person playing forever.
Yeah, yes, forever.
When you come back to it, you'd be like, holy shit. Now that doesn't really happen because with digital recording, things are moving so fast. And especially us, we've developed this structure to how we record that we really like, where we kind of finish songs as we go, so that we are looking at the record as a whole and we can say, okay, this is what we're missing. You know, if you get into that space where it's like, okay, we're doing all of the guitars for 13 songs in 2 weeks, you know, you're so zoomed in on guitar, you're not zoomed in on the whole picture or zoomed out on the whole picture of the album. So we'll do like guitars for a day and then throw a vocal on it and then kind of hear what it's sounding like. And okay, well, we've got a lot of songs that are in this lane. Let's change the guitar tones for these songs so that the record has some different colors and shapes and peaks and valleys and such. But that has removed that surprise moment where you come in the morning and you hit play and you're like, oh, fuck, I can't believe it. We actually have an album now. So the guests provided us that. Where we thought we had a version of the album or a version of the song, and then we would get their vocal, and it usually comes over in a Dropbox link or a you send it thing or whatever. And then we're like, okay, we'll download it, put it in. What's the song sound like? It's magic now. And that's really cool to get afforded that opportunity to be surprised by your creation, you know? I mean, everybody, for the most part, were people that we knew and loved and had some inspiration from that we wanted to, we were actively trying to incorporate into our thing. You talk about Shane, that part of that song, that bridge is extremely influenced by Silverstein and our time touring with them. And so rather than like hiding it or trying to dirty it up or punk it up or make it more like us and less like them, we just embraced that collaboration and said, well, when you sing it. Same thing with Tim from Rise Against's bridge. I mean, that bridge doesn't exist without us playing with Rise Against. We learned and stole a lot from them. And so, we definitely subscribe to the four artists copy, real artists steal.
But this is like where influences come from. I mean, I teach people to sing, and if everybody knew that everything's just the same minor pentatonic, they'd be very disappointed. But classical musicians were doing this years ago. You know, they would do little like stylistic things to kind of pay homage to each other. And I think that's really cool, though, how you guys just doubled down on it and you were like, no, we'll actually just have him sing on it.
That's a part of music culture that I love and miss, is that people would cover each other's songs, and this lack of competition, but a mutual respect and an inspiration that was coming from it. And so, you know, for us, we are so influenced by being on the road and seeing bands play live and interacting with them and becoming friends with them. And then you listen to only their records for a few weeks after the tour, and then you're like, okay, this now influences my songwriting. And so, you're 100% right. It just truthfully was like a triple down on it and saying, you know, will you take it? And then you get to like Astrida, which Pink Shift is a new band who's influenced this a lot. Maybe not so much sonically, but I think that I'm so greatly influenced by them living their politics. And Trey Bird is another example of this. Like, we came up in a scene that people would openly in Pittsburgh in the 90s say the N-word. There was nationalism in punk rock. There were some shows that opened with people saying the Pledge of Allegiance. We also were a part of a culture in a city that was really impoverished and really poor, and the military recruitment was as predatory as anywhere in the country. And you had our friends being presented as signing up for the military and going to fight and kill and die in wars, and the only options they had to get out of the impoverished town of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. So we knew what we wanted to do with our art, and we made the statement. We were an anti-war band. We were called an anti-flag. Our logo was an upside-down American flag. We were challenging the status quo of racism and sexism and homophobia and the economic status quo of war-based economics being the backbone of American culture. And so you don't have to do that as much when you're a band like Pink Shift, three people of color who live their politics, and their existence is a resistance to the status quo. Mm-hmm. The same with Trey Burke, a folk artist who lives his politics. So they maybe aren't as prevalent in the music as they are with an anti-flag, but they're still eating, sleeping, breathing that ideology. And so So yeah, it just was a way to connect ourselves to some people who are doing it in a different way that's also inspiring to us. And yeah, that's how you get those people on the record.
You have some familiar artists as guest spots, but then some new people that you also sort of used your platform for to, you know, include them, highlight them, make people more aware of them.
Yeah, and I mean, ultimately, again, there's never a guarantee that anyone's going to listen to anything you make. So you should go into it with the intention of how does this make me feel? And what do I get out of this? And is this rewarding? Is this make me feel like I am a better steward of the craft? Am I getting better as a songwriter? Are we getting better as a band? And thankfully, this album's checked a lot of those boxes for us. We think that we're still progressing and we're still growing and we still have something of value and that's viable to say. So yeah, just incorporating all of these people that have helped us in some way, it was an important aspect of the album, and we knew that there were going to be a lot of songs that were kind of vocal tracks. We knew we were going to do kind of a slow rollout with it, and you know, frankly, we've been making records for a really long time. We've made 13 full-length albums. If we are not pushing ourselves out of our comfort zone and attempting to do something different that we've never done before, I don't really see a reason for us to keep making records.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you know, you talk about the impetus of the podcast being a vocal podcast. I mean, we pushed ourselves. I mean, there's a 5-part harmony on Fight of Our Lives, and that's like a thing that we've never done before.
Really different, yeah.
Yeah, and so that's always the that's always the intention. You know, sometimes we fail, but I'm happy to say on this one, I feel like we succeeded in more places. I do want to say just what, you know, talking about the vocals of the record, John Lundin, who produced the album, he was really smart in terms of how we tracked the vocals and how we layered the vocals. You know, it's the most harmonies and the most layers of vocals on any Anti-Flag album yet. So it was, you know, cool that that got some attention from what the work that you do. So I'm glad that effort wasn't lost.
I noticed it completely. It's really cool. And I think in a lot of more punk bands, vocals don't get as much focus, you know. It's more lyrics, that makes sense. So,
yeah, for sure.
And I think that the creative angles you took, again, it's like after 13 records, you know, there's always a sound when someone's intending, when you're trying to remake a record you made before.
Yeah,
there's
yeah,
a
yeah.
sound that goes with that. And it's
we've learned that lesson either by attempting to do it ourselves or, you know, vicariously through other people. You know, we can't go backwards. We're not those people anymore. And I think that that's the most telling part of it, or the most true part to me, is that, like, in any time we've tried to put ourselves back in the headspace of the kids that we once were, we know too much, we've seen too much shit that it's impossible to go backwards. So
yeah,
all you can do is try to remember why you picked up an instrument in the first place, or what, you know, like that part, it's really good and really valuable to get in touch with the origins of your craft and your inspiration. But if you're like, oh, I want to make Back of the Government again, it's just not going to happen. I mean, it's like the reason that we made the decisions that we made in those songs were because we didn't know any better. And so, you know, yeah, and there's a lot of parts that don't make any sense and shit like that. So you can't recreate. You can only comment and use the lenses that you have on right now to see the world moving forward.
I like that. You can only use the lenses you have on right now.
You know, we've been a band for a very long time, as you say. But 2023 is actually the 30th year of Anti Flag.
Wow.
I've been in the band for 25 years. We were a band long before anybody cared. And we'll probably be a band long after anybody cares. I understand our contemporaries when they say things like from stage, if you guys weren't here, we wouldn't be here. But I don't subscribe to that. I care about making music with my friends, and I care about using that art and that vocation to make statements that will align myself and identify the collective of Anti-Flag as pro-peace, pro-human, and an emphasis on alleviation of suffering. I think that's our goal and our role and our job on this planet is to use whatever tool closest to us and our capacity to alleviate suffering in any amount that we can.
Things change, and the way that you develop as an artist changes after doing that many records. I mean, you have different skills and different perspectives. And I was going to ask you personally, because you do around like half the vocals, do you feel like when you guys are performing live that it's a little bit easier to get through long tours and things because the two of you kind of play back and forth? There's not just one person doing every single vocal thing all the time.
Yeah. Knock on wood. I've never had trouble with my voice, in any capacity. The workload of it, that's not really ever been problematic for me. Justin, who sings, like I said, about the other 50% of the songs, he has had some voice issues and had nodes and some different things like that make it so that he must warm up. He's got to have a regimen. The days off are calculated and used. But he's also gotten, his voice has gotten stronger, and he's learned how to, keep that muscle exercised and, not overwork it, but also work it enough so that it is consistently in a good place. And I think the fact that the two of us have very different voices is helpful too, because then we're able to cover a spectrum of sonics that maybe one person can't use all themselves. So I think if anything, it's like our favorite band, Clash. Aside from that, it's like the Beatles as well. And so multiple singers is just an influence on our band and, something that we're consistently trying to either steal from or pay homage to. It's a valuable tool in terms of the show. We can sense when one of us is like needs a break or needs something and the other one can step up. So certainly we're advantageous, in an advantageous or a privileged place having multiples of us singing. And Chris Head, the other guitar player, sings backup. Our guitar tech's got a microphone too.
Off stage?
No, on stage with us.
He just comes out and does some stuff?
That is so cool. Yeah, Mark's been with us since 2003. So as far as we're concerned, Mark's a member of the band, and they're a talented singer, and our show is kind of operational with this goes.
Okay.
At this point, after so many years of doing it, that he's got a lot of time, and so it's just like, hey, do you want a microphone? Do you want to sing? We don't hide him. He's just up there on stage with us, and
that's so cool.
Yes, I think that our band, a lot of it is about the communal aspect of even the sonics. There's a lot of gang vocals, a lot of layered vocals. And so
this is
a way to pull that off. We don't play to any tracks or have anything. We do have another thing that Mark runs is like some songs have intros between them, but but none of it's to a click or to a trap. So at any moment it can derail and be a fucking train wreck, but that adds a sense of realness and urgency to the anti-flag show that we really love and feed off of. So having multiple people up there to shout down microphones, and we also have like a few microphones on stage just if anybody comes up and wants it, like we don't care. It's
wow, that's cool.
Yeah, it's our show, you know, the collective show. It's not any member of the next show.
I love that. And also I think like playing to a click and track seems not very punk rock. You know, it really works very well for other genres, but it seems like the antithesis of what you do, essentially. It seems like not very free, you know, so.
Yeah, no disrespect to many people who are much more talented than ourselves that do it and do it well. We enjoy the spontaneity of the show. That's where our energy and our optimism and our fight comes from. So we are consistently trying to, like, I like setting the stage up a little differently every day. I want things to be a little further away, so I got to work a little harder and, like, keep us on our toes. Yeah, I tend to find when it gets stagnant, when the tour is long and everything's set up the same way and it's habitual, that those are the least exciting shows. The ones that are more exciting are when things go a little awry and you've got to get over hurdles and compensate for failure. That always leads to something fun or at least memorable. You know?
That's cool, because I have actually, over the years, whether it's someone I've toured with or just a show I've been to, I've seen some artists that just look bored on stage, you know, and in any sort of rock and metal, we shouldn't be looking bored. If it's getting so easy that it looks boring.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't believe that there are any rules whenever it comes to art. I think that people need to create how they want to create. As long as they're being true to themselves, that's the only rule that exists. I am not interested in competition. And so when it becomes which band is the heaviest or which band is the, you know, got the lowest frequency 808 drop programmed into the thing, like, that shit has consistently been a bummer to me. And you know, we talked a bit about the Warped Tour, which I bit about, like, festivals and things like that. Like, you'll get into these pissing competitions with people that should be your friends and you should be your co-conspirators and your ultimately, look, I've got a lot of friends who play the tracks and they've got some cool shit that they do and I'm proud of them for it. I just can only control what I can control, and again, like, I want to love doing it. I want to be entering year 30 like we are and think, can't wait to play this show because I don't know what's going to happen. And I'm excited for the possibility of having someone have an experience that they've not had before, myself included. And so that's why we do it this way. And so we've always done it. And it's allowed us to be A, better musicians than we've ever been as of today, and B, better friends than we've ever been as of today. And it's very rare for a band we've been doing it this long to not feel as if we're fun in the end, but as if we're getting better. And that's consistently our goal.
All you can do at the end of the day is be yourself, you know, and as an artist, I think there's a lot of people trying to be things, but everything that you keep consistently saying is just like, this is just what we do. This is how we do it. So it works for us. And I think that's so important, though. There's room for everyone.
Yeah, and we get a lot of shit because, you know, we talk a lot during the show or we've got a lot to say. And again, there's a lot, you know, I feel the same way. If you tell me I love this album that you made in 2000, why don't you make another one like it? I'm going to give you the same answer as I say to I saw your show and I didn't enjoy it. I'm sure there's another thing out there that you're going to love, and I hope you find it.
Yep.
But this is what I love, and you know, I again, I'm trying to work in my influences and trying to work in our inspirations into it so that hopefully it pays it forward. But ultimately, yeah, not going back in time and not interested in manipulating what we're doing because somebody else may or may not have a better time for it. Anytime we chase that, and we have, you know, when you've been a band this long, you will inevitably allow the noise to come in. But anytime we've chased opportunity, those have been the least rewarding.
Yeah.
I've also never had instantaneous success with anything in my life. You know, I mean, it might be cool to understand what that's like, get that perspective, where someone creates something and then the next day everybody in the world knows about it and cares about it. Everything Anti-Flag has done, everything I've done is just a human, has had this like bang my head against the wall and hopefully I break through at some point. And so, yeah, I mean, you know, we've got 5 records that are probably tentpole records for a lot of people. And they're always different, you know? It's like we don't have that one that sold 1 million copies. We have 5 that sold 300,000, you know? And so it's just like, it's like there's an ebb and a flow to it. And so, yeah, I mean, I imagine that having a song go on the radio and change the trajectory of their life instantly is probably a wild ride to be on. But it's something I don't know anything about. This is how I know how to do it. Not to chase for the immediacy, but to believe in what you're doing in such a way that you will either do it so much that people will come around to it, or you'll just wait the culture out and the culture will come around to it. That both have happened to us, you know. We've been in a punk rock scene that has gone through 3 measurable moments or flirts with the mainstream. You know, in the 90s when the band started, you had the Green Days and the Rancids and the Offsprings on the radio, and then it went away. And then in the early 2000s, you had the My Chemical Romances and the Rise Against and the da-da-da-da-da's that came to the mainstream. And there was a light shown on Anti-Flag at that time. And then it went away. And then in the late 2010s, you had this thing with the Machine Gun Kellys and hip hop latching on to punk rock aesthetics. And then all of a sudden, somebody sending you a picture of, you know, Machine Gun Kelly talking about Anti-Flag, and you're like, okay, that's fine, but I don't really care. I've just been driving my car straight. And, you know, it's nice when those moments of light and attention are shown down upon us, but they aren't the precursor of our success or our failure.
Right.
They just happen to allow for somebody to interact with us that maybe wouldn't have otherwise. And so we don't take those things for granted or look them in the mouth. I think they're equally as important, but it doesn't change or shape the way our band reacts or creates.
I think that's really important, though, because a lot of times in my life and also in the course of like interviewing people, especially, I've run into this consistent theme where some of the more successful people, or at least the people, you know, still making music, if you will, whatever you want to define success as, because I think that's got a whole tier of definitions. But really, it highlights what you just said, which is more to have values, you know, and a thing that you value rather than goals. Instead of saying I'm going to sell 1 million records, you have more of like a value of this is the way we're going to make art and make our message. And we're just going to truck along and you can get on or off the train, you know. Yeah, I think that's wonderful. Yeah.
And goals are important. When we first interacted with Tom Morello in the 90s, we did the Battle of Los Angeles tour, Rage Against the Machine, in 1999. It was right before they broke up, so it was a pretty tumultuous tour in that sense where the band wasn't getting along and we were kind of on the outside looking in. Yeah. But Tom became our mentor then, and you know, thankfully for us and the detriment of him, he's gotten an earful from us every year for the last 23 years. But he did tell us to make a list of goals early on and to demand the impossible with those goals, but to also be realistic. And so that meant writing, we want to sell 1 million albums on the goal list. Mm. We want to paint the White House black. We want to have erase racism from the society's vernacular, but also to do things that were manageable, like play a show in a city we've never played it before. Make a piece of art with a local artist that you wanted to work with but couldn't. You know, just like simple shit like that, so that at the end of the year you say, well, yeah, I didn't sell my 1 million albums or paint the White House black or do whatever, but I did do these things. And so I can count this as a success. Or at least I've checked some boxes off of my path. And, you know, that's valuable advice, but ultimately you're not creating for creation's sake. You're creating because you want to or you have to, or there's something that you want to say, and you're going to use tools within your means to get that. So those were valuable lessons that we got, but also kind of similar to the trajectory that we were already on. It just affirmed that what we were doing was the right.
Where are you going to play live this year? Do you have anything coming up where people can see you tour, or how's that looking?
Yeah, we have so much coming up. We'll be on the road all year. We're starting with 6 weeks with Bloody Molly across the U.S.
Cool.
That starts early February. And yeah, I don't know those dates. You can go to antifly.com if you live in a place that bands might come to. And then other than that, we're going to do 4 other U.S. and North American 4 legs this year. 4 other ones will be in Europe for a month this summer. And then we'll probably do a headliner in the fall in Europe as well. So our calendar is completely booked, most of which we can't discuss other than the Bloody Molly stuff. But it'll be out in the world, hopefully in the next couple of weeks.
That's really awesome. Was this after a long reprieve? Did you take a long time away from shows during the pandemic? Or
Much like everybody, we were shut down for a period of time that we were told to stay home and to worry and think about ourselves. But then when we came out of it, we did our first run of just like the makeup dates. That was fall of 2021. And then we had most of 2022 off, where we wrote and recorded the album from December 2021 until June 2022. That was all spent making this album. And So then we did a long European summer, and then we did a handful of weekends to close out the year. But yeah, I mean, we really haven't hit the ground in the way we're used to, accustomed to as a band, and we won't until we do this stuff this year. So it's a bit of both, but mostly it's just we really believe in the album, and we want to try to give it a shot and share it. With people, again, the way we know how to and the way we know best. So that's going to be a lot of North American touring, a lot of European touring, but hopefully we'll find ourselves on our list this year as we get to some new places again. And so that's the plan as well, is to try to get back to South America, some Southeast Asian stuff that we haven't done in a while. New Zealand, Australia is on the list too. So we'll be busy. It's a big world. And we're grateful for the opportunities that we have to try to see it and try to connect with people.
Well, get out and see them, everybody. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today, Chris. It's been an absolute pleasure talking with you. And I absolutely love your new record. I think it's full of amazing vocal appearances, amazing vocal writing, amazing vocalists, you know, all the way across the board. So thank you very much. Antiflag.com. You guys can get your tickets and find out more about these tour dates. Anything else you want to leave everybody with?
No, I appreciate the time. Thanks a lot. And hopefully we'll run into each other in real life.
Yeah, absolutely. If you guys come through Vegas, let me know. So that's where I'm based out of. So thank you so much, Chris. That wraps up this episode of the Voice Hacks Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. And don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review the show.